Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Hello, hello. Welcome to or welcome back to the Perfectly Imperfect podcast. I'm your host, Jenny Minnie, and thank you so much for tuning into another episode today. It has unfortunately been taking me a while to get episodes out because something is up with my audio. So fingers crossed, I have my computer next to me here to check that the audio is working, because I spent an hour and 15 minutes last week yapping, recording this episode, only to then later find out when I was going back to edit it that it just like garbled up the entire audio and you couldn't hear it. Fingers crossed that doesn't happen. It's looking fine right now. But yeah, let's get into it. This week's episode, I wanted to do an Ask Jenny episode, which is me answering your questions, basically giving advice on anything. It could be eating disorder related, mental health related, life related, relationships, school, New York City, in your 20s, anything sort of like that. And you have all sent in some wonderful submissions, so I'm going to go through some of the questions today. If you want me to offer some advice or answer your questions on any of your questions in the future or in future Ask Jenny episodes, I will link the submission form in the show notes below or the description of the YouTube video if you're watching this on YouTube, and you can send in anything there. I love connecting with you all in this way. I feel like I know that this podcast is just me talking to a camera, but this kind of makes it feel like more I'm talking with you guys and really connecting with you all. So I so appreciate you participating in this little fun form. I have so much fun with it. I hope you will too. I wanted to start with the first question, which says, I'm dealing with comparison to others in school. I feel bad about my lack of productivity and low tolerance to feeling overwhelmed by big projects, so much that I can't even start. I'm dealing with comparison to friends who don't have a comparable degree of mental health issues as well. So first thing I would say to this is make sure to remind yourself that everyone is on their own path. And you probably heard that so many times, and I know it's easier said than done, but this has been something I have been constantly reminding myself of almost every day recently, because I feel like I'm catching myself in comparison traps to people on social media and just people with different levels of success and different levels of roles and different jobs. There is always people doing different things from you, but that doesn't mean that it's better or more right than what you're deciding to do. I know it's easier said than done, like I said, and maybe in school it's a little bit harder to stop the comparison because you're literally maybe in the same classes at the same time, learning the same material. So the comparison is kind of easier to do, but I feel like it honestly is equally as easy to do as an adult, and it just feels a little bit more, well, not as an adult, but as someone working outside and not in the structure of university or college or school anymore. But instead of comparing yourself to like other people in your class, it's just comparing yourself to kind of everyone in the world and what else they're doing. So believe me, I have been stuck in comparison traps a lot since post-grad, since graduating. And the biggest thing I remind myself is that we're all on our own paths. And at the end of the day, your path has to work for you and nothing else really truly matters. Another point I want to make to this is that you also don't know what's going on behind closed doors. Someone you might be comparing yourself to could be deeply, deeply struggling when the doors close and you don't see them. Maybe one of their coping mechanisms is putting up a mask, showing that they're really happy, really excited, really successful, really driven, really motivated in school, yet behind closed doors, they're depressed and miserable and feeling the worst. And so you would never want to compare yourself to when they're feeling low, but you're so quick to compare yourself to when they're feeling high or when they're presenting as put together and successful. You only see that put together and successful side because that's what people want to share. And of course, it's more uncomfortable to share your vulnerability, share your sadness, and share your lows. But personally, I found a lot of growth in sharing that, not necessarily giving people the whole picture, because I think it's also important to maintain some of your privacy and keep the things that you need private, private. But putting up that mask from experience only makes it harder to then really get in tune with yourself and be authentically yourself later on in life. So that was a little side note, but basically advice on this is just to remind yourself that you don't see the whole picture. You don't know what someone's going through to get to the point that you're seeing them at. And so if you catch yourself comparing yourself to other students and other people around you, just remind yourself that you're seeing what they want to present to the world. You're seeing what they want to be perceived, and you're not seeing the other side. So you're only really comparing yourself to a part of them. Don't allow yourself to believe in the narrative that you're comparing yourself to this whole person, because you don't know that whole person. And then speaking to what you said about feeling bad about my lack of productivity and low tolerance to feeling overwhelmed so much to the point that I can't even start, that was also me, and honestly still is me a lot of the time with work. But in college, in school, I was like the worst procrastinator, and I kind of just fell into and like allowed myself to be identified as someone who procrastinates, and I kind of just succumbed to the definition and the label because I really didn't know how to not procrastinate. No matter how much I planned out my schedule, no matter how organized my Notion board was, no matter how put together my planner was, like I just couldn't do things before it got to that point where it's like, holy shit, I have no time to do this and I just have to do it right now and click submit and never look back. And I just feel like I then just believed that I needed that high level of stress and pressure in order to do anything. And so I found it really, really difficult to like motivate myself and just get ahead on things other than 2 to 3 hours before the actual deadline. But now, as an adult, and as I've been trying to work on my study habits and my productivity habits, I have come to learn that that procrastination merely stems from perfectionism. And it's actually your perfectionism that's holding you back and kind of making you procrastinate. It's not that you're unmotivated, it's not that you're unproductive, it's not that you're a bad student, it's not that you're lazy, it's just that you're struggling with perfectionism. And realizing that has really helped me get to the root of what my procrastination is and where it's come from. And so I've started shaming myself less for the moments I procrastinate, because I understand it's not a me problem. It's just kind of my mindset and the way my brain works. And I shouldn't be shaming myself for things that my brain is just kind of authentically responding to the foundation mindsets and perfectionism that I have. So basically what I'm saying is that don't shame yourself on the surface level for being lazy, or don't compare yourself to people who maybe seem more productive. Instead, just really start digging deep inside yourself and questioning and asking yourself, do I struggle with perfectionism? Do I have any rigid black and white mindsets around things? And try to ask yourself that instead of just focusing on the surface level issue, which is the procrastination of certain projects and schoolwork. And I know that's more difficult, obviously, to kind of do the deeper work, but I feel like it'll just help you more in the long run to ask yourself and address your perfectionism. And it won't necessarily cure your procrastination. Believe me, today I still procrastinate on so, so much. But it's really opened my eyes and allowed me to just have a little bit more compassion for myself when I'm doing work and facing deadlines and stuff and noticing procrastination. I can actually understand like why it's happening instead of just being frustrated that I'm a bad student or I'm a bad worker. So moving on to question number 2, this one says, how did you deal with telling everyone about your eating disorder back in the day? Or did someone come to you? And by the way, love your podcast. Thank you so much. Thank you for listening. I'm so glad you're here. I did actually do a recent episode all about my advice and my story throughout my eating disorder recovery. I will link that down below as well if you're interested in listening to it. But I will briefly get into the beginning stages of telling people about my eating disorder and how that kind of came about and how I felt. So in my experience with my eating disorder, I didn't really acknowledge that I had like the label of an eating disorder for a long time, and I was quite in denial for a long time and just thought I was doing the right thing and being healthy and getting fit or whatever, but I just wasn't aware of the long-term effects that it was going to have, because in the moment it felt quote-unquote good and everything was quote-unquote working. But as I was thinking about answering this question, a memory came to mind which I don't believe I've ever shared on social media before, and I just thought it would be helpful to share that because this is definitely a big part of my journey and how I kind of gained confidence in talking about my eating disorder and sharing my experience. So a while before I started my own recovery and really actively struggling, but also very actively in denial, I went out to dinner with one of my friends around that time, and she actually decided to open up to me about her struggles with anorexia and her own eating disorder. I'm not sure to this day, and I never have asked her, if she opened up to me because she was questioning and trying to hint at that I may be struggling as well. Or she just felt like sharing that with me because we were sort of building our friendship and getting closer, and this is a big part of her life. Whatever the reason, I'm so beyond grateful that she trusted me with that information and was able to be vulnerable with me and share that with me, because that moment clicked something in me and opened my eyes to, like, wow, this isn't a good thing that I'm doing. And it didn't, like, switch overnight. I didn't, like, decide to start recovery the next day. I definitely was still in denial for a while, but I think that conversation with her and her opening up to me about her struggles with anorexia and her eating disorder, I just resonated with so much and almost everything that she said, to the point that I even asked her afterwards. I was like, well, I feel the same things. I feel like I do the same things. Like, do I have an eating disorder? I mean, she's not a doctor, she's just my friend, but she basically was kind of like, well, if you feel like you do and you resonate with a lot of these things, like, definitely go seek professional help. And so honestly, I can give a lot of my credit for my ability to open up about my eating disorder to that friend from that moment at that dinner when she decided to open up to me, because that conversation was so profound in my journey to recovery and journey to accepting that I have anorexia and that I have an eating disorder, because I'd never had a conversation like that before in my life. I'd never met anyone who kind of opened up that they have this and that they're struggling with this. It was always just sort of like this unsaid thing that all the girls around me were trying to manipulate their body and not eat enough, but nobody really talked about it, and nobody really talked about how dangerous it was. So yeah, I can honestly give a lot of credit to her, if not all the credit to her, that I then reflected and did seek out professional help, and then later started recovery, and later found confidence in myself to do the same thing to other people, share my story, share my vulnerability, talk about eating disorders and mental health openly. And that has only brought me so much good and so much connection with other people. Definitely later down the line, as I was really needing to start recovery, my friends and family expressed concern just for kind of the physical changes that they noticed in my body. But she's a big part of what helped me kind of gain confidence and being able to talk about it and tell people afterwards, because she helped normalize it for me. Have you ever felt like your body is trying to tell you something, but you just can't figure out what? Maybe your energy crashes out of nowhere, your mood is all over the place, or no matter how well you take care of yourself, you just still feel off? I know I've been there. And for the longest time, I thought it was just stress or bad sleep, but what I've learned after being on my own hormone balancing journey this past year is that a lot of these symptoms are often tied to our hormones. This is where Happy Mammoth comes in. They offer a free 2-minute quiz designed to help you uncover the root cause of your symptoms. After taking the quiz, you get a personalized recommendation to help get your body back in balance. When I took the quiz, one of the recommendations I got was to start taking Hormone Harmony. Hormone Harmony is an herbal formula supplement that fine-tunes the hormonal system and is used by women of all ages. Happy Mammoth, the company that created Hormone Harmony, is dedicated to making women's lives easier. Using only science-backed ingredients, they offer a range of products designed to help you feel like yourself again. Head over to happymammoth.com and take their free 2-minute hormone quiz today to find the ultimate answer to your hormonal issues. For a limited time, you can also get 15% off your entire first order with my code PIPOD at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code PIPOD, PIPOD, for 15% off today.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
So moving on to question number 3 is, I'm struggling to navigate my relationship with alcohol in college. Do you have any advice? A little backstory on my relationship with alcohol. I started drinking probably in high school. I remember being one of the first ones to get a fake ID because my birthday is a fall birthday, and so I was always like one of the older ones in the grade. So I got my license first, I got my fake ID first. And also at this time in high school, around junior, senior year, is when my self-confidence and my body image started to become a very tumultuous relationship. I definitely said that word wrong, but yeah, my relationship with my body and myself was just going kind of quickly downhill. But whenever I drank and whenever I went out to parties, I kind of had this newfound sense of confidence that I didn't have when I was sober. And so I honestly really enjoyed that and kind of used it as a mask. Looking back, this is something I don't recommend at all, but it's something that so many people experience and go through, and I don't regret having those experiences of leaning on alcohol for that confidence, because I'm able now to look back and reflect and be like, wow, she didn't know what real confidence means and where it stems from. And now I'm here in my healing journey and growth journey and really actually understanding where a strong foundation of self-love and confidence comes from. So anyway, this is just my story. But then I kind of continued having that kind of relationship with alcohol in college. And my freshman year, there's no more parents. I'm living in Rome abroad, and the drinking age is 18. So all of us are like, lit, let's go out 4 nights a week. And yeah, that's what I did. I definitely prioritized alcohol and going out over school. I really did rely on it to feel confident, and feel confident talking to boys, feel confident in my body, because day to day when I wasn't drinking, I did not feel good in my body and I did not like myself. The eating disorder was kind of developing at this stage for sure. And then I would say that COVID honestly put a jolt in my partying, like it did for everyone. I couldn't go out anymore, and I had no reason to drink alcohol, and I didn't really enjoy drinking alcohol at home with my family. I was like, what's the point of that? And so I kind of just stopped drinking altogether. But then I noticed that when things started opening up again and COVID kind of ended and quarantine sort of ended, I was getting back invited to frat parties and bars and whatever. I just kind of had the complete opposite reaction. I had so much anxiety around drinking alcohol. And because I had started doing the work to recover and take care of myself and get in tune with myself, the idea of drinking and being in a place where I'm not fully in control of like my thoughts and my actions, that gave me extreme anxiety. Whereas like years prior, it gave me kind of excitement. And that was really interesting for me to recognize, just the complete like 180 shift I felt in my relationship with alcohol. Originally, I kind of pushed back against that anxiety. I was like, no, like you should be fun. You should go out again. Like, you know, bring back that old Jenny inside of you to, you know, have fun at parties and drink and go out. But the more I tried to like force that in me, the more uncomfortable, the more disconnected I felt from myself. And so now, honestly, I feel like I've come to a really peaceful place of just accepting that I don't enjoy going out like that. Drinking honestly, truly does give me anxiety, and it's not something I really want to do anymore. And so I guess I just wanted to share this and share my journey of kind of going from one extreme to the next to show you that it may feel extreme and it may feel tough to navigate at times, but ultimately your relationship with alcohol, I feel like, is very intertwined with your relationship with yourself because of the way that it can sort of numb certain feelings or heighten your confidence at certain times or just help you put on a mask a lot easier. It can really manipulate your relationship with yourself as well. And so I guess my best advice, and this is definitely not easy advice, but it's just to work on yourself, honestly, and really get in tune with your relationship with yourself and ask yourself the hard questions of, why am I drinking? How is this actually making me feel? Like, if no one's around me right now, no one's here to pressure me to go out, no one's here to pressure me to take the shot, do I want to take the shot? What does that actually serve me, or am I doing it based off of like societal pressure, anything like that? And just listen to that gut instinct. There is going to be a little voice inside of you that screams one way or the other. And I just want you to try to listen to that, because that is your gut feeling and that's your gut instinct. And if it's saying, I don't want to go out and I don't enjoy this and it actually brings me a lot of anxiety, then that might be really hard to accept if maybe you've built a lot of friends around partying, or it's just become like a normal activity you do to socialize. I know for me that was really, really difficult, and honestly, I lost a lot of friendships because I just decided I didn't want to participate in that anymore, and I realized a lot of my friendships were made because of our mutual enjoyment of going out and drinking. And then when I kind of took a step back from that, the friendship just didn't last and it didn't have the strength to continue because it was only based off of kind of our mutual enjoyment of socializing in that way. And while that was really difficult at the time, and I really struggled to kind of see those friendships slip and fade away, ultimately, I'm so beyond grateful because it's just enabled me to have the energy and the space to really pour into the friendships that did last and still are friends with me today and have been with me throughout my different phases and different growth periods and all of that. So that is my advice for kind of navigating alcohol in college. It's a very complicated one. It's also a very individual journey, but for me, it was definitely like alcohol was kind of manipulating and tied to my relationship with myself. So when I took a step back and really addressed my relationship with myself, that kind of helped give me clarity on my relationship with alcohol. So moving on to question number 4, this one says, first, I want to say thank you so much for everything. You are my comfort podcaster. I'm struggling to find the balance between school and social life. Do you have any advice on that? One, thank you so much for listening. So glad that you're here. First thing I want to say on this is that I too have experienced both extremes. I think very much connected to the past question. I kind of prioritized social life and going out at the beginning of college. And then in the middle of college, I kind of used school to be an excuse to not go out. So I kind of poured myself into work and into school. And then I feel like it was only by senior year that I actually started to grasp a balance between the two. And for me, it was between the three because I actually started working my senior year and I basically worked part-time while in school with a boyfriend and friends and navigating social life and all of that. So while going through that time, it definitely was not easy at times for sure. And I really struggled with the balance and I faced a lot of guilt for the things I wasn't doing. Like if I was prioritizing school, I would feel guilty for not showing up at work or not saying yes to social plans. But if I was prioritizing work, I would feel guilty for not doing enough school or friends, or, you know, if I was socializing, I would be thinking about school and work. And it was definitely not the easiest time of my life, but, you know, life isn't meant to be easy. Life isn't here to be smooth sailing. And it's in those hard moments of navigating difficult things that you grow and you learn the most about yourself. So ultimately, I'm very, very grateful for that period, but it definitely made like the end of my college experience kind of overly stressful. It's stressful for everyone, I feel like, but I don't know, working at the time was really difficult. But anyway, that's my experience. And so my biggest piece of advice for kind of balancing all the different things you're doing in college and school and in life at large as well outside of school is to really understand in yourself what your priorities are. This is something I'm definitely still actively working on. I feel like it's changed a lot since I graduated college too. But during that time when I was working and in school and socializing, I really had to prioritize and just understand that I'm doing my priority because this is what's best for me. And I will get to the other things later. I think regarding the socializing aspect as well, I was really nervous that because I would be so busy with school and work that I would begin to lose my friendships. And I was really, really afraid of that. And I feel like I was really insecure that I was going to lose my friendships because I was pouring so much of my time and energy into my work and my school. But if there's anything I learned from that period, it's that the friends that are meant to remain in your life will remain in your life even through periods of not seeing them for months because you're just so busy. If they're a true friend and they're there to support you through the ups and downs of life, they won't care and they won't mind if you can't see them for 2 months. You can still text them, you can still FaceTime them, and with modern technology it's still so easy to stay in touch. But I at the beginning faced a lot of guilt and worry that, oh my god, my friends are gonna think that I'm flaking, they're gonna think I'm unreliable, they're gonna think I'm not a loyal friend anymore. But to this day, I'm still friends with so many of those friends that I had worried where I was gonna lose the friendship, because they're true friends and they're meant to stay in my life. And they stayed friends with me through that busy period. They stayed friends with me even though I moved 4 hours away to a new city. And so this just really showed me that I don't need to worry about losing the friends that are meant to stay in my life. And sure, there's definitely been some people who maybe I thought would stay friends and we didn't and we drifted. But I feel like that's all a part of life, is just navigating different relationships and understanding that people maybe serve as a friend or as someone in your life for a part of your life, and then they move on, and you know, that's what's meant to be. I did have a whole episode on navigating friendships as well in your 20s, and I will link that episode down below as well. My second piece of advice for this, I think, goes along with understanding what your priorities are, but it is to really notice and question that like should voice in your head. If you're constantly telling yourself, oh, I should be doing more school, oh, I should be doing more work, oh, I should be seeing my friend more, that is some external opinion or external pressure speaking and not actually you. And so in those moments, really try to challenge yourself and stop yourself from being guided by that should voice and ask yourself, well, what is really going to serve me right now? If maybe you're coming to an evening and you got invited to a party, but you have work really early in the morning, and then you have a test also that week, maybe just prioritize school and work if that's what you feel is going to allow you to show up as your best self at work and perform your best on the test. But say you get to another evening and you've been invited to a party or want to go socialize and you genuinely don't have anything the next day and you'd actually be okay to go out and it'd be fun to go out. But maybe that should voice in your head is like, no, you should stay in and study. No, you should prep this thing for work. But if you really can go out, then do. It's just really learning to get in tune with yourself. And I know, again, easier said than done. Allow yourself to have fun, allow yourself to enjoy life, but also allow yourself to take things seriously like work and school if that's something that you want to prioritize in your life and is important to you. Last question here says, how did you come to enjoy doing things alone, especially going out alone and enjoying your own company in a completely new city? Have you struggled with loneliness and boredom when moving to a new place? All I do is stay in my apartment all day because I have no one to hang out with and it feels really awful. I have definitely experienced periods of loneliness and still to this day experience periods of loneliness, but it's definitely not to the same extreme that it used to be. I feel like the most lonely period of my life was beginning of 2022. I moved to New York City actually for just the semester to do a study away at Pratt Institute here in Brooklyn. And I was taking a certain design course to then, you know, have the credits transfer back to Northeastern, which is the university I went to in Boston. I moved away really excited for this program, but literally didn't know anyone in the city. And I got random roommates through Facebook who we didn't really end up being friends. Also, we weren't super close. And so I did feel really, really lonely at that time. I felt so far away from my friends, from my boyfriend, from my family, and just everything that was bringing me happiness. I felt like I just left it all behind, and I was really struggling to kind of create my own happiness and create fun experiences with just myself. I kind of got to this point just as the spring was coming. The first couple months, it was January, February, I feel like for anyone, anywhere, those are not necessarily the best months because you're kind of cold, it's still winter, I don't know. For me, they're never the best months anyway, but definitely by March and as the spring was beginning to show in New York City, I just sat with myself one day and I was like, am I really going to sit here and just stay in my apartment and not really do anything while I'm living here in New York City for the next 4 months? And I only had 6 months. And so I was like, well, I know it's scary and I know it's overwhelming and it's not something I really want to do or think will be that fun, but I might as well try it. And that was like taking myself on solo dates. I was so overwhelmed to go outside and do things alone. And I had a lot of anxiety and still have a lot of anxiety around what other people think or if they're judging me or if I look silly or if I'm gonna mess up and not know what I'm doing. Or maybe go the wrong way. I don't know. I just felt so uncomfortable going out and doing things by myself. But I was also so fed up with just feeling so lonely and sitting in my apartment not doing anything when I literally lived in the middle of Manhattan and there was like so much to do at my fingertips. And also as I was reading this question, I was thinking about the fact that it is a biological human need to have connection. So don't beat yourself too much up if you feel like you struggle to do things alone, because it is a normal human need to want to feel connected with human beings and feel a sense of community. That's something we all do need, but I think equally it's important to figure out ways where you can still kind of get that sense of connection, get that sense of community, even when you're not physically near the people who you feel connected with or feel like you have a community with. Because there definitely is still ways to build that sense of connection, build that sense of community, even when you're not physically near those people. And so for me, I definitely felt that lack of community and lack of connection when I was in New York City alone. I felt like I had left everything behind and I was never going to feel that sense of community unless I was with those people again. But the more I kind of pushed myself to just try and do things by myself and just be outside and be with other human beings, even though I don't know who they are and they're strangers to me, it was really interesting for me to recognize that I began to gain that sense of connectedness and community even just by being in places surrounded by other humans, even though I wasn't talking to anyone and I didn't know anyone, it was just still worlds better than sitting alone in my apartment where there were literally no other human beings to be connected with. And so first I kind of started out just pushing myself to go sit at cafes, sit and journal by myself, sit and get lunch or get breakfast by myself. And that was also really helpful in my recovery as well. At this time, I was also navigating earlier stages of my recovery. So going out and eating meals by myself not only helped build my confidence doing things alone, but it also just helped me build confidence in my recovery and kind of proved that anxious part and that scared part of my brain that was fearful to eat alone, but also fearful to eat certain foods. I could kind of challenge myself altogether. So sure, they weren't comfortable moments at times, but they helped me grow so much. So the more I did that and the more I kind of pushed myself just to be somewhere and exist somewhere with other people around me and kind of let the insecurities ride through me and try my best to let them roll off of me rather than let them consume me. So like sitting in a park or something and maybe I'm feeling insecure about what I'm wearing or feeling insecure about, I don't know, people judging me for being alone. And I would just really try to like let that go. And maybe I would listen to music or listen to a podcast. That also helped a lot because then I would be focusing on the music and the podcast rather than kind of my internal thoughts. But I also think it's equally really important to sit with yourself without any distractions like music or scrolling or podcast, because then you can actually listen to your internal thoughts and maybe start to question them and wonder why they're coming up and if you're noticing any perfectionism or black and white mindsets or rigidity or negative self-talk. All those things are things that you can begin to notice. Yes, they're uncomfortable, but they're really important to notice because they're not things that will just sort of go away on their own. You kind of have to address it. And so last thing I want to mention for this question is that basically the more I did that, the more confidence I began to build in just going out and doing things alone, to the point where I feel like I can now walk into an event, I can walk into a place, I can walk into a restaurant, a cafe, and I can be completely alone and feel confident that I will be okay, I will be able to talk to strangers, I will be able to hold a conversation myself. But that is not something I felt, what was it, 3 years ago now at all. And it's something that takes a lot of time and it takes a lot of patience with yourself. And it does take a lot of self-reflection just to get real with yourself instead of being frustrated that you don't have all this confidence that you feel like other people around you have. Again, kind of back to the comparison question, don't compare yourself to the people around you. Recognize that you're on your own path and you're building your own confidence to go out and do things alone and enjoy your own company on your own timeline. And it will take time. It's not something that completely changes overnight, but it kind of takes repetition and doing the things that feel scary or a little bit uncomfortable over and over and over to kind of reiterate to yourself, like, wow, I can have fun by myself and I don't have to rely on other people to feel good and enjoy my time. Solo dates have been actually so impactful in my life that I actually dedicated my senior year design project to building an app to help other people go on solo dates, just because I found so much joy and growth in solo dates. I was just like, how can I help other people do the same thing so that they can experience the same thing too? And that app now, almost 2 years later, is now called Solo and it's available on the Apple App Store. I have talked about it on my Instagram, so you may have seen it before, but it's basically an app to help you log, track, and kind of jot down notes on your thoughts, sort of like answer journal prompts about how your solo date made you feel. And now we have a fun little feature where you can actually friend other people and you can see how other people spend their solo dates, which I'm so excited for. And it actually launched today, on the day I'm recording this episode. So if you want to check out Solo, check out the app that I designed, and then I had a developer help me develop it. You can definitely go check it out below. I will also put it in the description of the video if you're watching on YouTube and in the show notes on the podcast. With that, I'm going to close this episode. Thank you again so much for putting in your questions and filling out the form. I so appreciate your participation, and I'm sending so, so much love as always. And I'll catch you in the next episode.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.